I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short
the
routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. And oh my God, Matt Harmon. I mean, my phone, I don't know, I know your phone's blowing up. My phone's blowing. I mean, my phone's overheating over here. You know, it's free agency. It's going crazy. We're recording here on a Monday afternoon where it is just hot and heavy right now. So much news coming from, you know, Schefter and Ian Rappaport and all these other reporters all over the place, man. But how are you doing, pal?
I was on my phone as you were just talking right now because, yeah, the phone's been blowing up, doing a ton of work this morning trying to... You know, during this time of the year, I also try to throw up profiles on the site for guys that get traded, guys that get, you know, like a new quarterback boost. And like, we've got a lot of those to talk about today, man.
Yeah,
so
tons,
very exciting, which makes it nice, too, that, you know, we can talk about those moves because, you know, it's like, all right, we're going to come here and break down the Kendrick Bourne signing. We could. Maybe we will at some point. But we've got some bigger things to talk about today. So I'm hyped.
Oh, man, I love it. Yeah, you talk about some of these quarterback moves. Obviously, none bigger than Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta, a four-year, $180 million deal. We're talking $45 million per year for Kirk Cousins. $100 million of this is guaranteed, by the way. There is a reason why Kirk Cousins is called the Bag King. Okay, he is the absolute Bag King. He does it again, Matt Harmon. He's going to be 36 years old coming off of a major Achilles injury. I mean, I swear to God, I don't even know if he's going to be ready for the start of the season. He tore his Achilles in late October, man. I mean, 30 at this age, I don't know. Anyways, very impressed with the Bag King. But people obviously in Atlanta are going to be very excited, I think, to bring in Kirk Cousins. At whatever point he's ready to play. Should be a boost for the offense regardless, a big uptick in the quarterback play. And again, they get Arthur Smith out of there and hopefully get some functional NFL head coaching experience there as well. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on Kirk Cousins going to the ATL?
Yeah, the way that this was kind of spoken about was that Atlanta was going to do whatever they needed to do to make this happen, which makes sense for a couple different reasons. One, because Atlanta was too good last year to be in the market for one of these top-level prospects. And I think if you look at the talent on the roster, that was probably going to be the case, you know, next year, that they could be around a 7-win team. They'd be picking, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th in the draft. They picked, like, 8th in the draft for two straight years now, or three straight years now, because, what, Bijan was the 8th pick. Drake London was the 8th pick. They're picking 8th this year. I think they'd probably be around that 8, 9, 10 range again this year if they just had, you know, any old goofball playing quarterback for them, because right. I think they have a pretty talented roster here. I mean, we do have to realize that, like, Desmond Ridder and Marcus Mariota, each of the last 2 years, have legitimately given the Falcons league worst quarterback play, in my opinion. Like bad. right around the bottom barrel of the quarterback kind of range in the NFL. That's what the Falcons have been getting, yet they're still a good team that wins games. So I think they were going to be in that position this year, because as you mentioned, the coaching staff, I do think, should be a pretty big uptick here. Raheem Morris is extremely well regarded. Zach Robinson, I think, is going to bring a lot of the stuff from the Rams, which really that works with the meta of the NFL right now. Raheem Morris also has familiarity with Kirk Cousins dating back to their Washington days. Kirk Cousins also has a lot of familiarity with what I think Zach Robinson is going to want to do schematically because of what Kevin O'Connell asked him to do in Minnesota, another guy off of this Rams tree. And really, like, bottom line, because they weren't going to have somebody in the draft, like, Kirk Cousins is the only guy on the market that's shown you over multiple seasons that he can give you above replacement level quarterback play. So, like, right. the reality here, James, is that Kirk Cousins is not just like the Falcons' best hope at quarterback. He was really their only hope at quarterback this year. So all risks aside, and you're right, he's not a guy that comes with a risk-free profile here. Right. I do think this was a move they felt and justifiably felt that they had to make.
The Falcons threw to wide receivers the fewest in the NFL, 209 pass attempts to wide receivers last year in 2023. The second lowest was the Chicago Bears at 259. So they had 50 more pass attempts to wide receivers than the Atlanta Falcons. So the Falcons, not only, and we've talked about this a lot, man, not only do they need to address quarterback, they needed to address wide receiver as well. But no doubt this is a boon to Drake London, who, again, probably going to be getting functional quarterback play here from Kirk Cousins, and most likely, almost assuredly, I think, an uptick in volume, at least in quality looks going into 2024.
Oh, yeah, no question. Again, like, think whatever you want of Kirk Cousins. I think he's been around so much. He's played so much at this point that he's going to give you he's just seen everything. He's played in so many offenses. He's really adept at the things that I think you need to be adept at a quarterback to play with Kirk Cousins, to play with Drake London. He's a guy that's going to throw in a tight coverage. He's going to trust wide receivers. Justin Jefferson, I had a conversation with him a couple years ago now at this point that him and Kirk really, really worked on the just kind of like, hey, even when I'm covered, man, like, just rip it to me and, like, good things are going to happen. And that was something that wasn't, like, Kirk hasn't always been willing to do. But here at the later part of his career, he's really evolved at that with a guy like Justin Jefferson. I mean, look, Drake London is not Justin Jefferson. I think he's extremely talented. But I think that they can build that trust and that rapport over time. And secondly, like, Kirk Cousins loves to work that middle of the field. That's where he wants to throw. That's where he wants to operate. And Drake London, when you look at the routes that he's really successful on, he's really successful on in-breaking routes. Digs, crossers, slants, these big post routes. So he has a guy that he can trust in tight coverage in Drake London because he can win those contested passes. He can play X receiver on the line, you know, working in those tight boundary situations. But he's also a guy that can work the preferred areas where Cousins likes to throw. So, yeah, it just makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you brought the other receivers on this roster because, like, James, can you actually name any current Falcons wide receiver other than Drake London? Yeah, I'm sure you can. It's Austin Mack, Chris Blair, and Josh Ali. Ali.
Who?
Right.
Who?
I mean,
who is Chris Blair?
Who are these guys?
I don't know. I don't know. So that is definitely an area to watch too. Like, and now that you have, we're just going to call it a grown-up offense. Okay. Like, that's what they're going to be running this year. Like, with a real quarterback and like a scheme that we don't know exactly what they're going to run, but it's probably going to come off of the typical Shanahan McVay type stuff. You know, we'll see if Zach Robinson like has the goods as a play caller, all that stuff. Like, now that we're talking about a grown-up offense here with good quarterback play, like, yeah, we don't have to worry about, oh man, like, let's just hope Drake London could slice off a good target share here. Like, no, forget about that. Like, you can go out now and in the draft, like, maybe take a wide receiver. You know, you can push this thing, I think, to the next level here because you have that baseline floor built in with coach likely and quarterback pairing.
I'm trying to look up, do these guys have any stats, these other wide receivers? I don't think they do. This is madness. This is crazy. They absolutely need to get wide receiver, and they need to address it Not that they need a frontline guy, Matt. I don't know how you feel about this. I mean, getting a frontline guy would be great. Of course it would be great, you know, but I mean, they just need depth. They need, you know, professional NFL caliber wide receivers, whatever it might be. They just need to address that room, and they need to get a lot of pieces moving in that direction, because it's just, it's crazy when you look at just the depth, the stats. I mean, all of it in regards to wide receivers for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, just, I think we've kept our composure enough at this point to really just kind of let our hair down here a little bit.
Okay.
Dude, this is so awesome for Drake London. You know, I mean, look, the reality is this is a guy that, like I said, has played with bottom barrel quarterbacks in each of his first two seasons. You know, like, put him, he was right on that, like, Allen Robinson, Terry McLaurin, DJ Moore, like, all of those guys that we've all, you know, bemoaned for years. Like, God, when is it just going to happen for these guys? They're obviously good players. Like, I think that Drake London is in that caliber of wide receiver. You know, we're talking about in their peak. I think McLaurin and Moore are still kind of in their peak seasons, but obviously Robinson, when he was at his peak, these are guys that were high quality X receivers that could separate at all three levels, that could run routes, that could get off press coverage, could do all the things that you want in a number one star caliber wide receiver. There's nothing when I watch Drake London and think, like, look, there are still obvious, of course, areas that, you know, you're a young player, you can improve or whatever, but there's nothing I see, like, there's a limitation on this guy because he can't do X. Like, he's not the fastest player, but, you know, some of the players we know are star caliber players in this league at wide receiver aren't the fastest, you know, in a straight line, whatever. So, you know, I think that when you look at Drake London, he has all the skills, all the traits, all the talents necessary to be, like, a true superstar type number one receiver. And I mean, when I watch him, I don't see anything that's limiting him. Of course, it's just the production, it's the quarterback. And I mean, for Kirk Cousins to get dropped in, like, and again, Kirk Cousins, not a flawless, not like a, you know, there are risks here with Cousins because of the injury, all that. But if Cousins is anything close to the player that he's been, the last 2 years in Minnesota, when they haven't been running this, I think people don't realize with Cousins and Kevin O'Connell, like, they've been running, like, real drop back, like, quarterback centric type stuff, not the you know, cookie cutter
play Mike Zimmer type stuff. Yeah,
not the boomer ball Mike Zimmer type stuff. They've been running, like, real drop back quarterback stuff. And if Cousins is anywhere close to that player, like, yeah, you can't ask for a guy that is better suited to drop in here and elevate a young ascending wide receiver like Drake London. So, like, man, for anybody holding Drake London bags in Dynasty, for anybody that's just, like, loves to see good players get
cash it, baby, cash it.
Yeah, I mean, we're feeling really good here in early March 2024 about where we're at with Drake London and what's happening right now.
Let me throw out some stats here with Atlanta, which I love. Okay, so Atlanta threw into open windows at the ninth lowest rate in the NFL. That should not come as a surprise. So, when, again, I want to go back to these, like, wide receiver specific stats, though. When Atlanta was throwing specifically to wide receivers, 4 touchdowns versus 9 interceptions, just a 59% completion rate. That's the fourth lowest in the NFL. The 4-9 touchdown interception ratio, I was like, man, that is really, really bad. So, of course, I go and look. Let me just throw out some other teams here. These guys are catching strays for no reason, but I'm just saying, New England, 5 touchdowns versus 16 interceptions when throwing to wide receivers. The New York Jets, 6 touchdowns versus 11 interceptions when throwing to wide receivers. And again, keep in mind, they're throwing to Garrett Wilson up in this. Okay. Like, come on, man. Cleveland. What are we doing, Cleveland? 10 touchdowns versus 18 interceptions to wide receivers. 18 picks, Matt Harmon. That is bonkers.
Special. We call that special. That's special.
That is nuts. I mean, you're throwing Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore. I mean, gee whiz. Finally, I'll just say this because, I mean, again, when we're right, we're right. Okay, Washington, and everyone would agree, they've got a good wide receiver core, okay, with their two guys there, all right? Their three guys there, rather. 14 touchdowns, 18 picks when throwing to to wide receivers, Washington Commanders. So no, Sam Howell did not play well.
Well, let's not go back down that road, are we?
Come on.
We're not talking about that anymore.
Come on. Just come on. Commanders fans, come with us. Come with us, okay?
They can't possibly care at this point. I mean,
they probably don't. Right.
Probably don't care anymore. Yeah, I don't care anymore.
Right. Okay. I can't believe how are you going to throw 18 picks? Well, you're throwing a Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, and Curtis Samuel. How are you going to do that?
Well, they were throwing a, you know, De'Ami Brown and Byron Pringle. Like, again, stop having me relitigate ancient history, James.
Relitigate. Okay. All right. So we talked about it from Atlanta's side. But again, it's not, you know, it feels like a zero-sum game a little bit here when we're talking about Atlanta and Minnesota. I think Kevin O'Connell did a great job in Minnesota, but why? Brother, where the hell does Minnesota go from here? What does it mean for Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison in particular? I mean, Nick Mullins, Jaren Hall are the only quarterbacks under contract here. Where does Minnesota go from here?
Yeah, so I had a good conversation with my colleague at Yahoo, Jory Epstein, about this last week. And, you know, the Vikings are, they've kind of consistently, you know, thrown out this idea that they want to have a competitive rebuild, which when Cousins has been healthy, they have. Like, they've been able to evolve the defense, right? This past year was a, you know, Brian Flores and what he did was almost like a revelation there on that side of the ball. You know, they've remade their run game, maybe not successfully, obviously, this year. It wasn't a great run game, but they have been competitive, right? They won 13 damn games when nobody was expecting them to win, or they won a ton of games, right? The previous season. They were an extremely competitive team in 2022 for sure. And then they were a competitive team where they were starting to get on the right track when Kirk Cousins was healthy this past year, and obviously then when the quarterback situation goes to hell, everything goes to hell.
Yeah.
So that does obviously bring us into question, like, where are we at this point? Again, the way I was talking about it with Jory, the way it's just been kind of told to me generally by other people is that the front office is and was ready to get on, like, the rookie quarterback timeline here. They want to develop a young guy. They want to start getting, like, their team pointed in that direction. But the coaching staff really wants to continue to compete with Kirk Cousins.
Of course.
That is not an exclusively Minnesota thing. That's pretty generally how these teams think them. Like, the front office is thinking about the future. The coaching staff is thinking about winning games. Obviously, for 2024, Kirk Cousins is most likely your best path to win games if you're the Minnesota Vikings. So it's understandable why. And, like, Kirk and Kevin O'Connell clearly had a great working relationship, probably a good personal relationship too, so you just want to keep those vibes kind of going. I understand why there was a big push there, but I also understand the front office perspective on this, and I think this has generally been a collaborative group. It's probably like, hey, let's plan for multiple scenarios here. So I think now if you're Minnesota, you're probably looking at sort of I do really buy the smoke around them and J.J. McCarthy, Michigan quarterback, who Derek Klassen's profiled for us and, you know, kind of the ups and downs of his game. I think when you read what Klassen says about J.J. McCarthy, you can see why the Shanahan acolytes would vibe with that type of quarterback and think that he can develop into a Cousins type at the position. Right. I buy that smoke right now that they have had their sights set on McCarthy. They like McCarthy. It's probably going to require them to trade up though at this point. So there is that hanging out there, and you're probably looking at a rookie type of quarterback like that, along with a bridge veteran type. Like, they're not in the Justin Fields market. They were never going to be in the Baker Mayfield market. I think they're more shopping in like I love Joe Flacco. Like, the idea of Joe Flacco, like, throwing play action heaters, vertical play action shots, and Kevin Stefanski, or what he was doing with Kevin Stefanski, that maps pretty well to Kevin O'Connell's offense. Like, you're looking at that type of bridge to a rookie quarterback now at this point. I think you have to fully lean into that is now where you are going as a team.
I think there's a few guys out there that I think could be a really good bridge option. I don't know what you think about Ryan Tannehill, but obviously he's out there.
I'm all set on Tannehill. I hear that too.
I just feel like if you could give Jacoby Brissett a little bit of coaching here. And obviously, when you pair him with a Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, I think he could be a really interesting player for Minnesota. And if I'm Minnesota and they want to, you know, have that competitive rebuild, I think Brissett would be perfect. I think he'd be perfect for Minnesota for where they're at right now. No one's confusing Jacoby Brissett for being the future, obviously. But, you know, he's 31 years old, going to be going to his age 32 season. But I thought he showed very well for himself, I think, in Washington last year. And seeing him in Minnesota, I think, would make a lot of sense. That would be probably the move that I would make if I'm Minnesota. But can we, let's say, again, let's say it's one of these guys, you know, one of these aging vets or whatever it might be, whether it's Brissett or Joe Flacco or whoever it might be. I think Justin Jefferson will be fine. To me, Matt, I feel like Jordan Addison is the guy here that really suffers from the loss of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mostly, too, because I still have my questions about, like, Jordan Addison's ceiling as a player. Like, I don't view him in that sort of, like, 1B receiver that we kind of talk about, like, in that range. Like, I think he's just more of a classic number two. Like, he's a good, solid two. If the overall ecosystem's production-wise is going to come down here with insert whatever veteran and rookie in place of Kirk Cousins, which is almost certainly going to happen, yeah, Jordan Addison will definitely suffer along with that. I agree with your point there, and I'm with you on Brissett, by the way, that I will never kind of let go of the little Jacoby Brissett Browns tenure when he had them as like a top 12 passing offense and EPA per dropback, and then Deshaun Watson comes in and just tanks the thing.
Yep, totally. Like,
that said a lot to me about Jacoby Brissett and the Browns offense, by the way, and Deshaun Watson too. And then those little sprinkling of moments that we got with Jacoby Brissett in relief of Sam Howell last year did nothing to like sort of quell that optimism. I agree with you that Jacoby right now is probably, if you just look at like the veteran quarterbacks that are available, he's probably, I think, the best bet if you needed it, a starter next year, like a bridge starter. Like, I think he's better than Gardner Minshew. I think he's better than Jameis Winston. I think he's better than Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, all those guys. Like, I agree with you. He's the best bet here. And it would certainly allow them, I think, to help be kind of in that competitive rebuild type of area. So I agree with you. That's a good part there. But yeah, I mean, look, the reality here is too, like, This team is good enough to drop in a rookie quarterback and not go to work and like compete, but it's a good environment to build up a rookie. So if they wanted to get aggressive and really trade up the board, you know, try to do, I mean, I know this didn't work out, but do like a Trey Lance type of trade up where you go from that 13-ish range in the draft all the way into the top three or top five to get like a Drake May or a Jaden Daniels. I mean, I think you could justify it if you're the Vikings, just because I think this group, like, this is a ready-made group to drop a rookie in, but I think they probably still would go that veteran type route. But yeah, I mean, like, I know that it seems bleak, like you lose Kirk Cousins and we don't really like have a guy ready to step in right away.
No.
But Minnesota does have options in this class to, you know, whether they want to sacrifice to get up all the way to the draft board, whether they want to sacrifice a little bit to get in that McCarthy range, and there's some veterans available. Like, there's a path forward here for Minnesota.
You guys can drink now, because I just saw the Patriots are telling Devontae Parker he's going to be released. So for those of you playing the Devontae Parker drinking game, go ahead and take your shot.
Pour one out. Make sure you do pour one out, though, for Devontae, though.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so there you go. That just came across my timeline as well.
They also they signed Antonio Gibson, too, to a big deal.
I
didn't have Antonio. A pretty big deal, at least, you know, $11.5 million for over 3 years. I did not have Antonio Gibson and Devontae Parker, you know, on the first day of free agency being headline moves, but here we are.
Come on. Yeah. I mean, New England's trying to cash in on this rookie quarterback they're going to take, you know, and just let's just ride that wave. Anyways, you know, one of the major free agent signings, obviously, was the fact that Michael Pittman was going to be franchised. You know, it was signed a longish term deal now with the Colts. I say longish because I was a little bit surprised by the shortness of the contract, to be honest with you. 3 years, $70 million. That's maybe up to 71.5, depending on who you talk to here. $46 million of that is going to be guaranteed. I got to be honest with you. I'm a little bit surprised that number came in that small? And there's two ways to kind of look at it. Like, okay, well, after 2 years, he can renegotiate again and cash in again. But again, it's just not what you would expect from a true, you know, top 20, top 15 wide receiver in this market. I don't know. I was just a little bit surprised. I think the Colts got a really good team-friendly deal here with Michael Pittman.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Yeah, I mean, $23 million per year kind of puts him in the Terry McLaurin, the Debo Samuel, you know, under DK Metcalf. Like, I don't think he was going to go into that range of, you know, certainly like what Cooper Kupp or A.J. Brown or Steph Diggs is playing on right now. So I think this makes sense for Pittman. I think the 3 years does allow him to get back into free agency. It sort of clearly, I think, puts him in that window of where Anthony Richardson's going to be on his rookie contract. Like, then yeah, right. You can pay Michael Pittman. Also, they're paying Jonathan Taylor. Like, you're paying your two best offensive players here while Anthony Richardson is developing on this rookie contract. But yeah, I think Pittman is a really fascinating player in terms of like where he ranks in the general NFL pantheon of receivers, because I've been saying he's like
that's
the most
a good point.
Underrated receiver in the NFL for the last like couple years, and I like a true one. In my opinion, I do think Michael Pittman is a true one. I think he's a guy that you can funnel your offense through and be a successful offense. He has been obviously really limited by quarterback play. And you like
Jesus.
I mean, but yeah, he's actually been like, we talked about the you know, the carnival ride that Drake London has been on, and how that, you know, puts him on that Terry McLaurin, DJ Moore, Allen Robinson sort of like train wreck of quarterback, you know, carousel.
Yeah.
But Pittman has been on it too, and it's
like, so bad.
I think you could argue that Pittman's has been maybe the weirdest of the bunch, although Carson Wentz also overlaps with at least one of the other players here, which is funny. Nick Foles actually overlaps with Allen Robinson too. So actually, now that I think about it, there's a lot of connective tissue here between some of these guys that have
played.
Teddy Bridgewater is involved. No, you know, Teddy Bridgewater didn't play with the Colts, but it's like it's a funny little group there that
well,
Pittman has played with.
Yeah, because again, it's like if you think about the Colts, like the recent, you know, Colts quarterbacks, they have just gone with these like aging veterans that whose arms were dead. You know, yeah. Matt Ryan's arm was dead. Phillip Rivers' arm was dead. So yeah, I don't know. My biggest thing, Matt, when we're talking about Michael Pittman, is people don't. I agree with you. I think he's super underrated. And in my mind, I'm like, this is a guy that you can absolutely build your offense around. And the reason I say that is he wins so well in the intermediate area of the field. But according to your tracking here, right, like only 18.3 of his entire target share was on the corner nine or post route. So we're talking balls that, you know, go over the top, right? And giving him a chance to win deep. doesn't have that much of a chance, right? 18.3 combined percent of his targets on these deeper shots. And to me, it's like, again, let's just think about the quarterbacks that he's had to play with. I mean, even Anthony Richardson, in the few games that he played with Richardson, again, we were hopeful, but I think early on in his development, not really looking to go deep. Right. So, again, just so much of it is concentrated in the intermediate and short areas of the field for Pittman.
You know what? I actually, now that I think about it, the player that his reception perception profile reminds me the most of is Michael Thomas during his kind of like best years with the New Orleans Saints. And he was another guy that, you know, people kind of obviously he was slant boy. He was just a possession receiver. He wasn't.
Right.
You know, But Thomas, I think, at times was a clear top 10, you know, maybe fringe top 5 receiver in the NFL. He obviously broke the damn receptions record there with the New Orleans Saints. But, yeah, I mean, because now I think Pittman's maybe like the Bud Light version of Michael Thomas, but he's in sort of that ballpark from like a usage perspective. Because you're right, man. Like Pittman, you look at his route tree from this past year, 12.8% of his routes were digs. 20% of his routes were curls, 28.6% of his routes were slants. I mean, that's pretty wild for a whopping 61.4% of his sampled routes in reception perception to be a slant, a curl, and a dig. Now,
all in-breaking routes, by the way.
Yeah, all in-breaking, short to intermediate routes. Now, that being said, those are like base NFL routes where you want your receiver to be really good there because they're going to pile up production. They're going to help you move the chains. And I do think a lot of that is quarterback play. You know, the role wasn't different with Anthony Richardson and Gardner Minshew, really. Anthony Richardson was very brief section of the season, but he was running a lot of those same routes with Anthony Richardson, I think, because number one, that's like where Michael Pittman is good. He's good on those routes, and you want him to be like you want your receiver to be quarterback friendly. And I think Michael Pittman is an extremely quarterback friendly receiver because he's gonna be open. He's gonna be where he's supposed to be. And that's another thing too. Like Pittman's great on those routes. I think he's good across the route tree too. Like he could be used on those corners and post routes. He could be used on out routes. Like his route success rate on those patterns is very good. And overall, he's been so consistent the last 3 years, James. Despite all this turnover, his success rate versus man coverage numbers have gone 74.3%, 74.2%, and 74.8%. I mean, that is like metronomic consistency, and he's been over 80% success rate versus zone and over 80% success rate versus press in 3 straight seasons. So, like, I think Michael Pittman is clearly good. I think he could probably be more utilized downfield, but you're right, man. Yep. Like, what are we talking about? Like, oh, he should be more productive downfield when Matt Ryan's his quarterback in 2022. Oh, he should be more productive downfield when Gardner Minshew. Like,
nope,
you could tell whether anybody knows what they're talking about if they tell you, like, oh, no, Gardner Minshew was pretty good for the Colts. No, Gardner Minshew was, like, acceptable backup level for the Colts, and that's it. Like, there was no, like, oh, man, yeah, he's really unlocking this offense. Like, he ran that RPO stuff pretty well, but, like, he was trying to give games away at times. Like,
oh, my God,
Gardner Minshew is certainly not pushing the ball downfield. So I'm interested to see if Michael Pittman's route tree develops with Anthony Richardson over the course of a full season. But, I mean, yeah, you look back at Michael Thomas, who – shout out to Michael Thomas, who was just recently released by the Saints. I mean, from a reception perception standpoint, people forget how good – Michael Thomas was at his peak. He actually still owns the second highest success rate versus man coverage score I've ever charted, 82.2%. And you know what he was running in that season? A lot of slants, a lot of curls, and a lot of digs, both in 18 and 19 when he won the receptions record. I always kind of wished that we had seen Michael Thomas with, you know, because he just kind of came in there and started hitting his prime when Drew Brees' arm was declining. And again, a lot of this is like, that's the offense that we're running. Thomas obviously started picking up injuries after that and never got to see him with another quarterback. But I don't know. I'm curious with Pittman if he can do like more downfield stuff, because otherwise, like, yeah, I think the Colts got great value here for him. I think it's a good deal for him. I think it's a good deal for the Colts. And, like, I have no notes. I think this is the exact type of contract you want to sign a guy like Michael Pittman to.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Philip Rivers, his rookie season. He had Carson Wentz in year number 2. By the way, it should also be noted he's seen a different starting quarterback every single year. I mean, say whatever you want about, okay, he's winning the routes, he's doing the thing. Okay, that's great. There is something to be said about quarterback wide receiver chemistry, though. Mm-hmm. And he has not had an opportunity to do that. Despite, even if these guys are dead arm guys, right, which they 100% were. They were just complete. Yeah. And Carson Wentz was just a mental wreck at that point when he got to the Colts. He's just had to deal with a complete carousel, brand new quarterback each and every year, man. That's crazy. That's it's tough to be successful doing that. And by the way, Michael Pittman still has been pretty successful, though, you know. Mm-hmm. So and you talk about winning down the field, Matt. The guy, I mean, when you're charting the guy, 77.8% success rate on the post route, nearly a 77% success rate on the corner route. I mean, again, this isn't exceptional numbers or anything like that, but certainly good enough to win. And win consistently when we're talking about those type of routes. So, and again, 50% success rate on the 9 route, Matt, which is, you know, again, a little bit below league average. But I think, again, if you gave him more opportunities downfield, I do wonder if he would be a little bit more successful on those routes if he knew he was going to get the ball on a go route, which throughout his career, not necessarily really getting those opportunities. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Pittman is we probably need to see more explosive plays, some of that, like I said, it's hard to have explosive plays when you have those quarterbacks that we're talking
right.
about. He's not really the weird thing about him is that he's not really a yak guy. Like we're talking about in breaking routes. I mean, in this past year, especially, he was tackled on he was brought down on first contact on 84% of the in space attempts I had him charted. That's obviously really not great. It's also kind of an outlier low number in his career. There are seasons where he was better than that previously. So that's something maybe he can work on, get more explosive in that yak game, being more of a tackle-breaking type. But I do think that teams have known that they can squat on this Colts offense because of who the quarterback is.
Yeah.
So I think I think we don't know the full story of Michael Pittman 100%. As a player. I think that's kind of where I come down. And again, like I'm going to bet on a separator like Michael Pittman basically every time. You know, I mean, 74% success rate versus man, like I mentioned, that's a great number. Being as good as he is against press coverage, zone coverage. I mean, all these routes where we're talking about, oh, he's only used on these routes, whatever. He's great on those routes. Like, why wouldn't you want to use him there? So, like, I agree that we do need to see more explosive plays out of Michael Pittman. I think those can be brought on by offense. I think those can be brought on by a quarterback who's going to push it on those out routes and stuff like that. I think the story is kind of yet to be told in terms of Michael Pittman's ceiling, but like no doubt a good player, no doubt, in my opinion, like a number one receiver. He's probably on kind of that low end maybe of the number one receivers, but shoot, I mean, teams would have fallen all over themselves to get Michael Pittman, and the Colts, I think, did right to get it, like get this deal done with a guy that is good in the locker room, works hard, and is a homegrown player.
Yeah, last year, 156 targets, 109 receptions. 109 receptions for Michael Pittman. Obviously, did not explode in terms of yards or touchdowns, just 1,152 through the air and 4 total touchdowns despite seeing all of those targets. Again, first of all, come on, guys. You know me. I love Gardner Minshew, but he is an absolute – what he is an exciting backup. You know, because he's got the stash, he's got the backstory, all that. Man, he's a super exciting backup quarterback, but no doubt he is a backup quarterback. And Michael Pittman, I think, still, you know, did admirably well. 1,152 was a career high for him. 109 receptions, obviously, a career high for him as well. Man, don't be surprised, dude, as he goes into his age 27 season in 2024. Do not be surprised if Michael Pittman has an absolutely stellar banner year. And when we circle back here a year from today, you know, he is entering that conversation of, oh my God, is Michael Pittman a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL? Don't be surprised. Do not be surprised if that conversation happens, because I think he has a talent level and all the things you're looking for in an absolute true stud number one. And I would not be surprised at all if Michael Pittman makes that leap next year in 2024. Okay, so we are a wide receiver show, Matt, but man, there were some serious running back moves made in the first day here of NFL free agency. Starting with Saquon to the Eagles. Saquon Barkley to the Philadelphia Eagles. 3 years, $46.75 million. 26 of that is guaranteed. I did the math here. Two franchise tags for Saquon Barkley would be worth about $24 million in guaranteed money. So he did beat that in terms of the guaranteed money and then also you know, tax on that third year as well. I don't think he'll see that third year, but he's also young enough, I think, to cash in again after 2 years of this deal with the Philadelphia Eagles.
One thing I've sort of challenged myself on when it comes to all these countless hours of discussions with running back value and all that stuff is two moves really made me sort of challenge myself on sort of my priors here, because you look at ecosystems like the 49ers and ecosystems like the Detroit Lions and you think, you know what, you drop any old running back behind those offensive lines and those big time, you know, the system that the 49ers have built, and any running back is going to be successful. And really, we've seen that, right? Like, I mean, the damn Lions, too, like, they got a league high in rushing touchdowns out of Jamal Williams. So, like, I think that those teams could have a real belief that, oh, yeah, we can just throw anyone back there. But those two teams did anything but that. They sought out premium talent in Christian McCaffrey and Jahmyr Gibbs, like, big moves, you know, to get real talent at that position. And I think an ecosystem that could elevate any old talent at running back and instead elevate the ecosystem, really weaponize the ecosystem at running back there is what they wanted to do. And I think that the Eagles, you know, who have been really kind of, they've been kind of cycling in Miles Sanders and they cycle in, you know, DeAndre Swift last year, who gets a pretty wild deal from the Bears, but that's another talking point for a different time. I think they see Barkley as a unique opportunity to get a guy who's not at McCaffrey's talent and not as young and explosive as Jahmyr Gibbs, but sort of maybe their kind of window to their dollar store Walmart version of getting that type of weaponization of their rushing ecosystem. It wasn't the same last year. Nothing was really the same on that offense, but even without Jason Kelce, it still should be a good offensive line, although Kelce's retirement loss is obviously so huge. Still should be a good rushing ecosystem with the lanes that Jalen Hurts gives them. So I see where they're kind of going for with this Barkley thing.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a player that last year, 2023 Giants offense was an absolute train wreck. He still compiled 1,242 total yards, right? And again, I think, if anything, Matt, I think what's really interesting here is, and you talked about this, I believe, in last week's show, in regards to Philadelphia, you could justify them making a move at wide receiver. I'll throw this out to you. Now, running quarterbacks generally don't throw to running backs, but I do think Saquon is a little bit of a different animal, you know? Do you think that he gives the Eagles an extra layer, an extra passing option opposite A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith?
I struggle with this because I think we are not really giving, and we've talked a little bit about this on the show, that I think we're not really giving enough credence to just like how different this offense is going to look with Kellen Moore calling the shots here. Like how how is Jalen Hurts going to fit into that? Are we going to see a different Jalen Hurts than what we've seen in the last few years? I think that's a big part of this story. It definitely gives them another option. And I've argued that they really need like another pitch in the pass game. We talked about that on the wide receiver needs show, that like, I think they need another pitch there. Maybe Barkley can do that for them. But I'll, honestly, like if we're being real, like Barkley's been a fine pass catcher, but he's not like a difference making pass catcher.
He's not,
you know,
CMC.
What I'm saying? No, he's not CMC. No. And honestly, like probably 90% of the time we talk about a running back in the passing game, it doesn't quite have the same impact that we think. Even Jahmyr Gibbs, who we talked about, you know, it was like, wow, this guy's going to be a big time pass catcher in the league. He's going to be so explosive. You're going to line him up and like do option route stuff. I mean, you know, they just kind of really used him as a running back. You know, they really just used him as a running back. So I think that that's probably where I come down with the Barkley stuff, that they need him to make the running game better first and foremost before we talk about anything about the passing game.
I know it seems like a million years ago, but his rookie season had 2,000 total yards, right? I mean, they threw him the ball, Matt, 121 times his rookie season. He caught 91 of them for a good 721 through the air.
Long time ago, though.
Yeah, that was no doubt about it. But again, four out of his 6 years in the league, he's been, you know, over 1,200 scrimmage yards. I mean, in 2022, he had 1,650. His second year in the league, he had 1,441 through 13 games. Through 13 games, he had 1,441. So Saquon's an absolute difference maker. I don't know if the injuries are catching up. Maybe they will.
Yeah,
I do think, though, in a healthier offense, hey, man, you're the king of this. You love talking about running backs in good, you know, healthy offensive ecosystems. And certainly I think that's what we have here. It's certainly an upgrade, Jesus Christ, over what they had in New York, you know. So I think this could be a really nice pickup, and it is a really nice pickup for Philadelphia, but I think it's going to be – it could be a really good match between these two parties in Saquon Barkley and Philadelphia. I think the Eagles need an extra weapon, and I think Saquon Barkley is going to be so happy to be playing for a competitive team in 2024.
Hopefully he likes pushing Jalen Hurts, you know, on the tush push, because he's going to be a part of that. And he's got those big quads too, right?
Right.
So,
man.
You know, he'll,
what are those two guys
there
combining to bench? What are those two guys combining to squat, dude? Holy hell.
I need to know. I definitely need to know the squat off results between Saquon and Jalen Hurts. I need to know.
I mean, dude, that's got to be minimum 1,000 pounds. We're probably pushing 1,200 pounds between the two of them. I mean, that's a lot of force back there. That's a lot of force back. So you lose Kelsey. That's okay. You get Saquon's back there. You get a little extra push. So
a little extra push in the tush. That's what we're looking for in Philadelphia.
That's it. That's what we need. That is what we need here. Okay, so Saquon goes to Philadelphia. Josh Jacobs, another Pro Bowler, goes to the Packers, and then Green Bay turns around and says, Aaron Jones, thank you for your service. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. They cut and release Aaron Jones after signing Josh Jacobs. Your thoughts there as the Raider, former Raider, goes to the Packers?
It sucks for Aaron Jones, I think, honestly.
Hell yeah, it does.
It sucks for Aaron Jones, who he's such a good player. Clearly, is still a good player when he's healthy. But the when he's
exactly
healthy, I think, is an optimal word here, because the 2023 season taught us a couple of things. It taught us that the Packers' development plan with Jordan Love worked out perfectly. Also taught us that they really hit on pass catcher. You know, all these day two, day three pass catcher picks all are good in some levels, right? But it also taught us that this offense is just not the same when Aaron Jones is not out there. You know, the drop off from Aaron Jones to AJ Dillon and the rest of these guys was just like, it was too extreme, really, to work with. And I think that probably at this point, the Packers have now had, they cut Aaron Jones' pay last year. They probably had another round of pay cut discussions, and I think that's a lot for like a player to just take, you know, like, all right, just keep knocking my pay down every year even though I'm still good. So I think there was like an impasse that they reached, and again, it really sucks for Aaron Jones, who I've talked to multiple times, great guy, great player, one of my favorites to watch at running back the last few years. So this does sting, but with how important the run game is to this offense and just like how many injuries that Jones has been dealing with of late, I understand why they went to look in a different direction, but still prioritize the position. And again, they're in a unique situation too, because you have all these pass catchers on rookie contracts. Like I haven't seen the numbers yet on Josh Jacobs' contract, but I'm sure it's somewhere between the Barkley and then the, like, you know, DeAndre Swift, Tony Pollard type range. You can afford to do that at running back when you have all these cheap pass catchers at this point. So I like the move for them, even if it does really suck for Aaron Jones.
Look, not only did Aaron Jones have a good season, Matt, he was the straw that stirred the drink. You know, when he was out, the Packers offense did not look good, period. Okay, and that's, and by the way, that is big for a Matt LaFleur system. Like, you have to have these guys. He needs to, absolutely needs a running back that can get you yards and generate yards and you know, open up the play action. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. When it was A.J. Dillon, offense looked not functional.
Not so good.
When it was Aaron Jones, the offense looked fantastic, right? So that's part of it where you're like, man, that's got to stick in your craw. Not only did he have a good season, he was an integral part of the offense to when they were good, right? So, and then they said, okay, hey, again, great job. Thanks for the service. We're moving on. That part of it seems a little harsh to me. And I am surprised that Green Bay didn't make a little bit more of a concerted effort to bring him back.
I mean, Aaron Jones' last five games, 127 rushing yards, 120 rushing yards, 111 rushing yards, 118 incredible yards, 108 yards. Like, it wasn't as if he didn't finish strong. He finished with five straight 100-yard games.
Was
super explosive.
Awesome.
I mean, like, multiple games over six at or above 6 yards per carry. But then the problem is, you look at the game log before that, and it's a lot of, like, inactive,
four
carries, you know, seven. Right. Like, I just think we'd gotten to a point with Aaron Jones where, like I said, I think probably there was a pride aspect to play here, and I don't blame him. Like, he has a reason for saying, hey, this is how I finished the season. Like, why wouldn't you, like, come on, like, let's work this out. And, you know, they're pretty staunch with what they want to do. But, I mean, Jones is at a point in his career where you don't typically trend back the other direction, right?
True.
At running back.
And yeah, because he's going to be 30.
Right, he's going to be 30, and Josh Jacobs is, like, sneaky, still pretty young. He's 26 years old. He'll be 26 this season. So I think he's just he's handled a lot of work, but he's a fresher, younger player that I think they can maybe rely on a little bit more.
Yeah, I'll see we'll see if he's a good system fit too. You know, I think that part of it goes a little bit underrated in terms of some of these signings. So, I don't know. We'll see. In 2022, obviously, Josh Jacobs was fantastic. Compiled 2,053 total yards. He had 12 total touchdowns. And in 2023, obviously not nearly the same player. Didn't get the amount of work. He went from 340 attempts to 233 attempts. He went from 1,650 on the ground to 805. So, more than a 50% reduction there in terms of total yards. Although, it is fair to say, for much of the season, the Raiders were not, they weren't invested, let's just say, in McDaniels and all that. So I think that part of it, I think, makes a little bit of sense. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if we get a rejuvenated Josh Jacobs there for Green Bay. But, it does suck for Aaron Jones, who, by the way, Green Bay also moved on from Bakhtiari. So, you know, some of these legacy guys, man, the Green Bay is just moving on.
I mean, they'll all be on the Jets soon. Aaron Rodgers, GM, front office, shadow GM, Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Jones, Bakhtiari combo to the Jets. Sure, why not? Let's make it happen.
I mean, Bakhtiari, at least, like, that's going to happen for sure. I don't know about that, Aaron Jones, but Bakhtiari, he'll for sure be on the Jets roster by the end of the week.
Yeah. No doubt. All right, so that's the show, man. Obviously, we didn't get to all the storylines. We'll get to some more of these storylines in our next show. But for now, we got to go, man. From Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We will see you. And remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Peace.